Sorry. We'll start Wretched Radio in 54 seconds. The reason that I'm breaking in again is because, oh, it's such a crucial time of the year for our ministry, every other ministry too, but for our ministry so that we can be healthy entering into 2026. We have very big plans. We're going to be invading university campuses to exalt Jesus Christ as the King who is irresistible once you understand who he is. We want the students to hear that and have joy. We want to be publishing more resources, more books, more social media content, more Sunday school curriculum, but we can't do it without our gospel partners. We currently have a matching gift campaign. You will double your impact if you consider and pull the trigger. Can I say that? Pull the trigger. Yeah, we're evangelicals. I can say pull the trigger on becoming a gospel partner. You can do that at fortisinstitute.org/donate.
Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Some councils are auditing schools and urging a ban on the terms boy and girl.
For those who are in an open or polyamorous relationship, your relationships are holy.
A gay black woman's victim status is less than that of a black trans woman, who ranks below a black Muslim trans woman.
We don't want to just win the argument about sexuality. We want to use this as a gospel opportunity.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The rise and fall of Christian nationalism already? This is Wretched Radio. Oofda. That's right. I said oofda. It's all the rage, depending on your theological circle. Christian nationalism, it is still, in my estimation, very much on the uptick. It is becoming increasingly popular in particular circles. Surprisingly, there's a Roman Catholic version of Christian nationalism. There's a Protestant version. There's a Reformed version. There's a theonomic version. So however you define this rascally term Christian nationalism, the reality is it is a growing trend. The question and debate, of course, is this a good trend? Is this a biblical trend? And is this trend continuing to grow, or is it possible that it is beginning to self-implode? Neil Shenvey is an individual. Everything I've read by him, I haven't read everything, but everything I've read, he's thoughtful. I think he's a Presbyterian. He's got degrees from like Princeton, and he's a chemical guy, and he just seems to be thoughtful. It doesn't look like he's punching. He's trying to persuade, not just, you know, have at it and fight over stuff. So I generally appreciate his tone. And he wrote a rather provocative title, The Rise and Fall of Christian Nationalism. And the reason that he believes that it could be seeing a fall in Christian nationalism is because of some of the current expressions are not very godly, according to Shenvey. Before we can embark on determining, is it rising or is it falling, we need to know what Christian nationalism is. And frankly, this would be the fly in the ointment. This is what makes a conversation about this subject so difficult because of the range of definitions. And you've got different camps of people who are claiming Christian nationalism. You've got the world trying to tell us, you put your hand on your heart when you say the Pledge of Allegiance and you're a Christian nationalist. So let's start out so we can perhaps have a productive conversation about assessing where the bell curve is on Christian nationalism. Let me define it like this. I think this is helpful. It's not perfect, but I think it's helpful. Christian nationalism, keep in mind, there are going to be varying stripes inside of this camp, but Christian nationalism is anything on the right side that is not traditional separation of church and state. And when I say traditional, I mean 49. That shouldn't have been hard math. Wow. Is next year going to be 250 years in this country, the celebration of the founding of our nation? Zoink scoob. And for those 250 years, the founding fathers, they set us on a course of separation of church and state. Why? Well, they had seen the abuses and the blood that was shed because of the mingling of church and state in Europe. And it was both sides, by the way. It could be Roman Catholic. It could be Anglican. They weren't real fond of Roman Catholics and the bloody messes that were made, depending on who the king or queen was, Protestant or Catholic. The founding fathers saw that and said, we got to figure out a way to keep that from happening here. And so they concocted something called a separation of church and state, that they are simply different realms. Now, I happen to be a fan of that because I see those realms delineated in the Bible, that you've got the ministry of government and you've got the ministry of the church. Third, I think you've got the ministry of the family. So I think the jurisdictional realms that the Bible defines are those three entities. And I get it. There can be like slight overlapping simply because we commingle. We have to coexist together. And I don't mean that like a bumper sticker. And so it's not perfect to say that they are three ring, it's a three ring circle that never touch. They do, they overlap to a degree. Nevertheless, I see those realms, and I believe biblically they are separated. A Christian nationalist would say, nope, there is a blending. Again, different nationalists to varying degrees, but they would say there is a blending of those. Neil Shenby, in his article, which, by the way, you can find it at the Christian Post, he talks about the book that was perhaps the most influential in defining Christian nationalism. There were two big books that he cites. The first is the book that was dealing with a separation of church and state. It was called Christian Nationalism. That's the name of the book, Christian Nationalism, by Andrew Torba and Andrew Isker, my apologies, called Christian Nationalism. They upheld mainstream American ideas like functional separation of church and state and the freedom of non-Christians to operate their own places of worship, synagogues, mosques, or temples. In other words, that there would be tolerance for other not Christian religions. According to the authors, their primary goal was to encourage Christians to build a parallel Christian society, economy, and infrastructure. Now, they would be considered Christian nationalists. They endorsed a book that I would say is a little bit more of the further away from the separation of church and state line. And that was Stephen Wolfe's book that was The Case for Christian Nationalism. This is how Shenby summarizes it. It was a more radical attempt. And I don't think he meant like, you know, radicals, but it was like, whoa, that's like not the way we've seen things in America for 249 years. It was a more radical attempt to break free of contemporary modes of political thought. His ideal notion is led by a Christian prince who resembles God to the people and is sort of a national small g God. It's pages 287 to 288. The Christian prince has the power to call synods, to resolve doctrinal conflicts, and to confirm or deny their theological judgments, which then became the settled doctrine of the land. That's page 313. In this idealized state, quote, arch heretics who are publicly persistent in their damnable error and actively seek to convince others of this error can be justly put to death, page 391. His book included some unusual views on ethnicity, affirmed that he was not making a white nationalist argument, however. Okay, why is it important for us to understand those books? It reveals the range of those who would be on the right side of the line, if you will, or left side, whichever you prefer, of traditional church and state. So you hear a little bit of a difference. Nevertheless, the former book by Isker and Torba, they actually commended the case for Christian nationalism. And Shenby cites these because he believes while they are not the those that are being pretty, we'll just say abiblical in their expression of Christian nationalism, he's not saying that these are they, but he's saying that their books are the seedbed that are now bringing to fruit a lot of Christian nationalism that is could be the fall of Christian nationalism. And he cites in particular a podcast of a self-identified Christian nationalist named Corey, M-A-H-L-E-R, Mahler or Mailer, Stone Choir Podcast. Furthermore, his podcast was recommended by Gab CEO Andrew Torba. As the number one Christian nationalist podcast in the world, on his new website, ChristianNationalist.com. The table is set. What are these guys saying that could be an indicator that Christian nationalism could implode? Quote from this Christian National podcast. By any objective scientific standard, blacks are not fully human. Boing. Adolf Hitler was a Christian prince. It was evil to permit women to vote. Quote, you can have either a civilization of blacks, but not both. What must be done is obvious. Quote, Jews and blacks are both a problem. Quote, it should be illegal for women to work outside the home. Quote, tolerance for the Jews is apostasy before God. Quote, Adolf Hitler is in paradise. Now, those quotes should cause any Christian to go, whatever it is that you're selling, we're not buying. Now, again, I don't want to impugn the other guys that have written books on Christian nationalism and suggest that they would endorse what these people are saying, but Andrew Torba did commend it as the number one Christian nationalist podcast, and they're saying things like that. And if that's the direction of Christian nationalism, then I think Shenvey would be right. We've seen a rise, and we will see a terrible fall, a crashing down of Christian nationalism, probably, frankly, of any stripe, because people will see that and ask, well, hold on a second. If they're saying those things, what is promoting those types of sentiments? And if the answer is Christian nationalism, then I think Shenvey is right. You could probably say, bye-bye, Christian nationalism. But there's more to the story. Next on Wretched Radio.
Here's a question. When's the last time you heard of a ministry making everything free? That's what happened this year at Fortis Institute. For years, we sold our books and our studies, all of our resources, because that's how we kept the lights on. But this year, we closed the warehouse. Everything we produce is now completely free. And here's the opportunity you have right now. Every gift you give through the end of the year is matched. Dollar for dollar match up to $500,000. FortisInstitute.org. Give now and watch your gift double today.
Would you like the university experience without the, you know, university experience? The Masters University invites you to visit their campus, or you can visit them online at masters.edu/wretched. It's Masters University, the university with the university experience without the university experience. masters.edu/wretched.
Let me ask you a question. When was the last time you actually felt something without fear, without shame, without immediately wanting to numb it? If you're living on autopilot, you're not alone. Millions are told the same thing. It's just a chemical imbalance. Hey, take this, you'll be fine. But you're not fine. You're numb. Dr. Greg Gifford gets that, and his new series, Life Without the Numb, is available right now, absolutely free at FortisPlus.org. This isn't about ignoring struggles. It's about transformation from the inside out. Every man knows what it's like to fight a battle no one else can see. You wake up, you're determined that today is going to be different. This time, you're going to be stronger than the temptation. But then evening comes. And there you are again, right back where you started. You're making promises to yourself that you already know deep down that you're not going to keep tomorrow. That's what Todd Friel gets into very deeply with his resource, Play the Man. It's available right now as an ebook, an audiobook, and video series only at FortisPlus.org.
Revelation. Special revelation is God's act of making himself known through direct means. In history, God has spoken directly to people like Adam, Noah, Abraham, Moses, and the prophets. 2,000 years ago, he revealed himself in the person of Jesus Christ. Today, he reveals himself in his perfect word, the Bible. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Eight times. Jimmy blanched eight times. This is Wretched Radio. When I was reading the quotes from a Christian nationalist podcast, Jimmy, there were eight of them. Each time you winced.
You were watching, yeah.
What?
That was terrible.
You don't even like to read it. It sounds so racist and so horrible. And saying that Adolf Hitler was a Christian prince? Adolf Hitler is in paradise? Tolerance for the Jews is apostasy before God? And then how's about their attitude in this particular podcast toward Black people that they're not fully human? I thought we kind of had already figured that out long time ago. And when I say a long time ago, I'm not talking about the Civil War. I'm talking about the Bible, that skin color does not make you less human. It just still, when I stop and ponder it, kind of fascinates and staggers me that for some reason there is a human propensity to see people with different shades of melanin. And either think like lesser than or some sort of an enemy or threat or danger, because we don't do that with other body issues. You don't see people saying, you know, those people with size 12 shoes, they're subhuman. Okay, we kind of used to do that with left-handed people, but I digress. It's skin color that has a tendency to cause people to think higher of their shade than somebody else's shade, but it doesn't require skin color. Racism is having a superior attitude because you just think you're better than, and it doesn't involve skin color. And we see that around the globe, don't we? There's all kinds of racism taking place, even inside of the same nation with the same shades of skin color. We're seeing it in Africa right now. We see it in the East. Racism is a pernicious sin. It's always been a part of the human condition post-fall. And it's Christians who should be the ones who say, no, that is not the way to judge another person. We don't judge a person based on their skin color. Now, you can do some judging based on behavior, but skin color, it's like saying, hey, Jimmy, you know those people with really bushy eyebrows? Troubles. They're dangerous. Why? We just reserve it seems, for skin color so often. Nevertheless, Christians should be leading the way when it comes to saying, no, there's Black people aren't less human. Just staggering. And so those quotes from a Christian nationalist podcast, which apparently is the number one Christian nationalist podcast, according to a website, ChristianNationalist.com, could be that Christian nationalism, the expression of it as it becomes more and more, well, I'll use the word grotesque, it could be the end of it. Now, not everybody who labels themselves a Christian nationalist is of that extreme. Let's note that, please. The point of Neil's article and the reason we're interacting with it is because if this becomes more and more mainstream in Christian nationalism, then whoever's holding on to a non-traditional church state position needs to come up with another name, And I'll be honest, I think one of the most helpful things that could happen for us right now, if we did have more denominational names when it came to the issue of church and state, because the shading of it, it's so tricky. It's so difficult. And without some sort of moniker, I just think it's just going to be more and more division, more and more online fighting, more bickering in our camps. Let's return to Neil Shenby's article, The Rise and Fall of Christian Nationalism. He asked the question, how did Christian nationalism go from an ambiguous pejorative from progressives? In other words, did you just sing the national anthem? You're a Christian nationalist. Okay, that was the start of it, it seems. But that then became a small but growing movement among Reformed evangelicals. for instance, Stephen Wolfe's book, etc., a non-traditional church-state separation position. But that now has become a repository for gutter racism, misogyny, and anti-Semitism. He rightly says, the story is complicated. And he comments, though there are undoubtedly Christians who fuse Christianity and patriotism in unhealthy ways, the term itself is often poorly defined, conflating extremist groups with mainstream Christian conservatives, which is why at this moment I'm a big fan of labels, because we could use them, because Christian nationalism is just not a helpful title. He goes back to 2022. There was the publication of the Torba Isker book, Christian Nationalism, and Stephen Wolfe's The Case for Christian Nationalism, as we explained a moment ago. Shenby writes, the two books, both of which are recommended on Torba's website, sparked significant interest, especially amongst disaffected young white Christian men who view institutional evangelicalism as compromised by feminism, progressivism, and critical race theory. Are we starting to hear this gong being clanged a little bit more regularly? The disenchantment and disenfranchisement of young white males, where it appears that they're going, enough. I'm we're not going to take it. No, we ain't going to fake it. We're not going to take it anymore. That was kind of catchy, that. And so the movement is growing, and they see mainstream evangelicals as just being too passive. And those numbers are growing. And his contention is that these gutter-like manifestations of Christian nationalism can be traced back to these initial books. Not that these initial books would endorse what they're saying, but they served as the impetus. They was like, yeah, there's our battle cry. And they've taken it, they're running with it, and it's getting a little ugly. Shenby writes, neither of these books reveled in the open bigotry that characterizes that podcast, those statements. Unfortunately, the past few years have witnessed some segments of the Christian nationalist movement lurch hard in this direction. Why? Because they've had enough. They simply have had enough. Now, one of the initial book authors, Isker, wrote, I use the term trash world to describe our dystopian society. The rulers of trash world want you to be spiritually homosexual, whether or not they can make you actually homosexual. There's a direct line from the first wave feminists introducing women into the proxy war of democratic politics, voting, to the most destructive perversions of trash world in current year. Okay, what's trash world? It's our era. It's trashed. It's garbage right now. And feminism, especially the feminism accepted by conservatives, is a demon goddess responsible for our enslavement. Now, when you talk like that, you should expect people to say the things that we've heard, and I'd rather not repeat again. And I'm no prophet, but if we're creating a culture of that sort of disgruntlement and even fear, it'll almost certainly, we'll see people get physical. That's where it could go. It won't stay contained in the tongue, unleashing their venom. It could become physical. Shenby, judging by the social media feeds of many professing Christian nationalists, the fundamental problem we face is not our own sin, but the ascendancy of women, foreigners, and Jews. I really never thought I would read something like that. And the fundamental solution is not redemption through Christ, but the repeal of women's suffrage, mass deportation, and the end of American support for Israel. And aren't we seeing that? And we're seeing it coming from different popular figures that are now debating the Christian attitude, the American attitude toward Israel, from very popular social media influencers. I don't know if it's the fall of Christian nationalism, and I really want to be clear. Not all Christian nationalists are this grotesque, but they got a problem. right now. Christian nationalists have a problem. And I think it's up to them to get this cleaned up. If they want it, I'm not a Christian nationalist, and happy to express my position of more traditional separation of church and state because the Bible promotes that separation. But they're good brothers in that movement. And they got some people in there that are professing to be Christians that ain't speaking so goodly. And they need to address that. And if they don't, boy, the word Christian nationalist, it will actually step into the descriptor that the progressives have given it, as if it's some sort of a poison. Let's see what they do. Let's see how they go about the business of pointing toward those people that would identify with them as a Christian nationalist. Because it's one thing to aim outside of the camp. Will they aim inside to clean it up and avoid a fall? And until tomorrow, go serve your king.